So I don't know when the last time you went on a youth weekend was. So just so that we all know what we're talking about. So a youth weekend is a special gathering where young people are invited and nobody else is allowed to go. And the subjects that are chosen are often supposed to be relevant for young people specifically. So I'm not going to embarrass you by asking whether it was more than 50 years since you went on a youth weekend, but you may recall that the chapter that we've had from Ecclesiastes 12, "Remember thy creator, remember your creator in the days of your youth," is a popular subject for youth weekends. I think I've been on more than one youth weekend where that has been the theme. Now, I want to take it as our theme this morning, and you might say, well, some of us aren't of the right age for this anymore. So one of the things we need to do is to reclaim this chapter for all of us, and I hope I'm going to be able to do that. So let's just remember what we're reading then in Ecclesiastes. It's Solomon, I think, who is writing. He's described as the son of David. He's the king of Israel in Jerusalem. He is wise. He's arranged many proverbs. And he spent most of the book exploring life. He's found that life is futile. But here we are now in the reading that we read together in chapter 12 with the conclusion of the matter. It starts with this phrase that I'm going to be focusing on in verse one. Remember your creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. And then, as Graham alluded to earlier on, it sort of describes the evil days. And there's all these pictures, which I'm not going to go into a great load of detail about, some easier to understand than others, about we're losing our eyesight and our hearing, and there's things to do with grasshoppers and almond tree blossoms that are less easier to understand, and silver cords and all the rest of it. But clearly, it's a picture of something bad that happens to us and to our bodies after the days of our youth. And then we come to the signature phrase, or one of the signature phrases of the book, in verse 8. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. No, everything's empty, he's saying, in life. And then the conclusion of the matter comes, the big conclusion, I suppose, in the last two verses. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is to fear God and keep his commandments, it says at the very end. So, as I say, I just want to focus really on the first bit. Remember your creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. And I'm going to split it into four little chunks, and we'll spend just a little bit of time thinking about each of those. So, remember your creator in the days of your youth before the evil days come. Okay, four things. And I hope that will be a way to manage what we're talking about. Now, I'm not going to do them in order, because the youth bit is the elephant in the room, which we need to deal with first. I said, why is it relevant for us to talk about things that are to do with our youth in an exhortation which is before a room which has people of diverse ages, shall we say? So I don't know if you know this. In Hebrew thought and in the language, there are four phases of life. There are four common words for a person as they get older. So you start off being a child, a yeled, or if you're a little girl like Elsie or Ada, you'd be a yalda. So you start off being a yeled, and that's a child. So that's to do with, it comes from the word for birth. So you're a just born thing, you're a baby. You're completely dependent still on your parents when you're a child. And then you move on to the next phase, which in our English Bibles might be translated as a young man or a young woman, or in more old-fashioned translations, things like a lad. for a boy, or something like a maid or a damsel for a girl. And this is somebody. So the word here, no longer to do with being born, but it's to do with being shaken off or stirred, as I understand it. Well, that's a bit funny. Maybe you're shaking off the shackles of your family. You're starting to be independent and sort of being your own person, but you're still subordinate to your parents at this stage of your life. Probably, for a young lady, she's not married yet. She hasn't become a mother. The young man, he's a teenager. He's not yet the head of the house. It's that kind of stage. And then after that, you become a man or a woman, an ish or an isha. And this is just a kind of general word, actually, for a person, as well as being specific to a stage of life. It's also the word that you'd use for a husband or a wife. So we're sort of getting to the idea that you're the head of a household. You're sort of, in charge of a family unit, if we're thinking of it in terms of phases of life. And then after that, you get to be a zaken, an old man, and I suppose you're past your prime when you're older. So you're an old man or an old lady afterwards. Okay, so that's all very well. I think we can understand that. Maybe we don't normally think of it like that way in English, and so sort of struggle to translate the terms a little bit. But that's how it is. Those words are very common in our Bibles. So, Ian, why are you saying all of this? Are you about to tell us that youth, in the days of your youth, in verse one, is to do with that phase before you're a man, a proper man or woman, when you're just a lad? Well, no. This is where it gets interesting. This is where it gets interesting. So, those words that I told you are to do with how old you are, and it's just kind of calendar age. Of course, there's a lot of overlap. It's not when you get to 18 or 21, you switch from one to the other. It's not like that. But they're to do with how old you are. This word here is a different one, and it's the one which is used of fighting young men in the army. It's used of young men who are sort of just getting married. It's that kind of thing. And the root, the word, the idea is to do with being chosen. So you're somebody that's worth selecting or choosing at this age. Now, that puts a different bit of a slant on this word. It's not focusing on you being young particularly. It's just that you've got qualities, skills that are at their prime, if you're one of these people, this kind of youth. You can imagine when you're ch choosing your troops in the army, then you choose a youth, somebody with vigor, somebody who's physically fit to be in the army. If you're a young lady, looking at the men, then it's somebody that looks good and has kind of got all the right bits, hasn't lost their hair yet, and they're sort of the right shape, I suppose. And nothing wrong with them physically at all. They're at their prime. Is this kind of idea. In another scenario, when you're picking teams and you want somebody to be on your football team or in the rounders team, and it's the first person you choose is somebody in their youth like this. It's somebody in their prime, somebody in their at their peak. Now, of course, there's a strong correlation between your age and whether you're at your prime, and that's clear in this chapter. It's saying, well, afterwards, physically, you're gonna deteriorate. So my point here isn't to somehow claim that this is a bad translation of the word. It's to do with your youth. Really, what I'm just trying to, and I hope it's not too nuanced, is to say the emphasis is more to do with your abilities and what you can do with exactly how old you are. here. And it's saying that when you've got something to offer, when you've got skills and abilities, at that stage, you should remember your creator. You know, you could imagine a graph, I suppose, if you're the sort of person that does imagine graphs, of your ability to do something over time, and it probably comes up, you know, and then it goes back down again. But it's going to peak at different points in time, depending on what you're talking about. You know, your hearing and your sight are not going to have exactly the same peak. But equally, your physical strength is going to be a different place as well. But then, if you think about it, it's not always that young people are best at things. So, for a something like your experience, is something that, you know, you get better at all through your life, I suppose. It keeps going up and up. Or your wisdom or spiritual maturity, these sorts of things are things where your prime is much later. And therefore, I'm sort of saying to you that maybe it is some of the older ones in the room who can take this to heart. They're kind of in their youth, at their prime, and should be using what they've got in the way that we're being exhorted here. Maybe because of the composition of the audience, we should just have a little reminder that about older people in the Bible being useful and respected. That there's more than one passage that talks about having a grey head, and they're normally positive. We should honour people with grey heads, it says in the law. In Proverbs, there's a proverb that says the glory of young men is their strength, and the honour of an old man is their grey hair. And we can think of scriptural examples of people who served God in later life. Someone like Caleb seems to have been physically vigorous in his older life. But there's also Moses, I suppose, really, that his important work doesn't start until he's 80. Abraham, the first mention of his age is when he's 75, but his You know, he peaks in his faith later on, I think, when he's 99 or 100 is when he's you know, believing the promises made to him about having a child. Or we could think about Anna in Luke chapter 2, who's she's older. I think she's 84, or perhaps she's been a widow for 84 years, even depending on how you translate the verse. And she says, when she sees Jesus, well, it says that it says that she's been serving night and day with fastings and prayers is what she's been doing. And after she sees Jesus, it says that she speaks of him to all those who were looking for redemption of Jerusalem. So, a faithful lady devoting herself to service and even preaching and telling people about Jesus after what has happened. So, just still focusing then on this first little bit, in the days of your youth part of our phrase, I've been trying to broaden it out and say it's not just for young people, and that it's saying use your skills, your ability, your best efforts for God, something that we can all of us take part in. The opposite is worth thinking about, I suppose. You know, the eligible young man, the warrior, he could focus on, you know, his appearance, his honor, his reputation. In our lives, we could use what we have, our skills, our time, for selfish purposes, for our own education or career, or, you know, to make ourselves rich or for our well-being, etc. But all of us are asked to focus here in our metaphorical youth on our Creator. Give the best of our produce to God, which is a principle from the law, I suppose. You know, whatever you've got, give the best of it to our Father. So I need to move on. I said we're going to look at all these four aspects of the phrase. So first of all, remembering. Let's just think about that for a moment. Remembering our Creator. Really, there are two aspects, aren't there, to remembering. One is just remembering that God is there, that he exists. So having an awareness of God in our lives. So that would include finding time to pray to God, to spend time with God, to read the Bible and listen to what he's saying to us and to meditate upon it. That would be a way that we remember God. But remembering also is remembering what God has done for us. You know, when the children of Israel are asked to remember, it's often to do with them coming out of the land of Egypt, and they're meant to remember their salvation, to remember the mighty works that God has done. And I suppose give thanks to God for those. And so the analogy for us is to give praise to God and to remember what he's done for us and to give thanks to him. That would be the remembering part of this. It's so easy for us to think that we're busy and not to do this and to live our lives as though God didn't even exist. Just bring to mind a couple of Jesus parables that sort of talk about this. We can think about the sower, couldn't we? The parable of the sower, where the seed has been sown and one of the kinds of seed there, it says that the thorns choked it as it grew. It talks about the cares or the worries of this life, you know, pushing God out. And so God somehow gets strangled away by the world that's around us. Or we could think about the rich fool who built bigger barns for himself in Luke chapter 12. It talks about him storing up treasure for himself, but not being rich towards God. And he's a fool for doing that. So again, that's an example of not remembering, not finding time for God. Okay, what have we done? Remember thy Creator. I said I would say something about thy Creator, your Creator. Remember your Creator. So that's going to be the idea that we are not the be-all and end-all. Somebody has created us. Somebody has given us life. Somebody has made our environment around us. It's, has given us blessings and an opportunity to be here. And we don't independently exist. And so it's to do with not being proud and boastful about ourselves, but being humble and realizing where we stand before God. In the context of Israel, you can think about Deuteronomy chapter 8, where at verse 11, God says to them, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and so on, then your heart will become proud. You'll forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt." So that would be forgetting our Creator, be just thinking, well, I'm here on the earth without God, and you know, everything that I do is by my own strength, and I'm a bit puffed up about it. But it says here, you may say in your heart, "My power, the strength of my hand has made this wealth," but you shall remember the Lord your God. It is he who is giving you power to make wealth, and that he may confirm his covenant. And a little bit further on in Deuteronomy, in the Song of Moses, in chapter 32, it says, "Jeshurun grew fat and kicked. You are grown fat, thick and sleek. He forsook God who made him." So they've forgotten the creator. They've forgotten that it's God that created them, that created their nation. And that's what we shouldn't be doing. We should be remembering him. So there's only one bit of the phrase left. We've had remember your creator, already talked about in the days of your youth, before the evil days come. Need to have a little bit of a think about whether there's something we can learn from that. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, this is portrayed as being, well, before you stop being able to hear and see and I don't know what else it is, when your teeth drop out and stuff like that. And that is going to be a barrier before which you've got to do the remembering. We probably can broaden it out a bit. And the more general idea is, isn't it, to seize opportunities while they exist. It's not going to be forever that you can do this or that. God's putting an opportunity before you, and at some stage it's going to be time limited. And so we need to seize the moment. We shouldn't put things off that we could be doing now. And we can think about places in the Bible where there are examples of that. I've already talked about the rich fool building barns for himself. He's thinking, well, I can carry on doing this. And of course, in the parable, his life is taken away with from him. It wasn't that he could just carry on and on and on. And for the obvious reason that he would die eventually, and that we have that in Ecclesiastes 12. After all these decaying of your body, it says that eventually in verse 7, the dust will return to the earth as it was. We can think of other places in the Bible where there was only a certain amount of time. I suppose with the flood that happened, people could have responded right up until the door was closed, but most people didn't. We can think about the parable of the 10 virgins. There's a time for filling your lamps with oil, but it's not forever. Eventually, the bridegroom will come and it'll be too late to go and try and get some oil then. And again, the door will be shut. The opportunity will have passed. The evil days will have come. In this analogy, in James's letter, he talks about the danger of boasting about tomorrow, saying I'm going to go to this city and that, and I'm going to do some business. He's sort of making plans as though that there's no time pressure at all. I can sort of, regardless of what God's got in store for me, I'll do my thing. And I suppose we're all a bit guilty of that. I'll put it on my to-do list. I'll do it later. I'll do it when I get home. I'll do it tomorrow, next week, in the summer holidays, next year, when I retire, is when I'll get round to doing it. So I think there is an exhortation here to do things in our youth, as it were, before the evil days come, while we've got a chance. Okay, I've sort of spent a lot of time on half a verse there. Let's just remember what it says at the end of the chapter as well. It says the conclusion is to fear God and keep his commandments. So I suppose that's an expansion of what we should do when we remember our Creator. We should be fearing him and keeping his commandments. We should be honoring him, we should be obeying him. And just interesting here in these last two verses, the word all comes four times. Might not come in your Bible, but I think we can count them together. It's the same word in the Hebrew. The conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments, because my Bible says this applies to every person. And then it says God will bring every act, all acts to judgment, and everything, all which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. So This is definitely the conclusion. There's all. Just going back to the second of those, the translators find it hard to know how to put this. What the text says is, where mine said, this applies to every person, and some Bibles say things like, this is the whole duty of man, or something like that. What the text says is, this is all the man. Okay. Which I think is. I can understand that's not normal English, so of course you've got to do something with it when you put it into English, but we get the idea. This is the basic thing. This is all the man. This is what a man is doing. This it seems to be what it's saying. You know, this is we've really come to the most important thing, the bottom line, as it were, and it's to fear God, keep his commandments. All the rest of the stuff in the book is useless and vanity of vanities, we're told. So then we're about to take the bread and the wine, and so let's tie together what we've got in our minds from the exhortation with what we're about to do. We are remembering now, we're remembering God's salvation, and we can think about Jesus. Did he do the things that we've been talking about? So remember, I was saying, well, doing things in our youth is to do actually with giving our best, you know, the best of our abilities when we're at our prime. Well, Jesus certainly served God and throughout his life gave his best for God. He remembered, of course, he did. He had a close relationship with his father and prayed with him, and certainly didn't forget who had sent him. His creator, I said, well, that's really to do with not being boastful and proud and puffing yourself up. It's to do with being humble, and Jesus is our example of humility. Did he do all of that before the evil days come? Well, he didn't miss opportunities. He was relentless in his service. And so he's an example to us of all that we've been talking about. And I suppose we could also think about the fact that we are a new creation. And so when we remember our creator, in a sense, we could think of it as remembering Jesus. You know, we are created as new men and women. We have a new life through Jesus. And so we remember him as well. We remember that through God and Jesus, we are a new creation. Through his death, we're given vigor and strength, and we are a whole man through him.